Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. A public health order issued in late March by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, quote, suspends the introduction of persons from designated countries or places, if required, in the interest of public health, end quote. Certain migrants, regardless of their origin, are seen by the government as a serious danger for introducing the coronavirus to the U.S. Today, we take a deep dive on how the CDC order affects the lives of asylum-seeking migrants by examining how it's being implemented along the Texas-Mexico border. Texas Public Radio's Reynaldo Leaños Jr. is based in the Rio Grande Valley. Ray, thanks for being here.
Hi, Norma. Thanks for having me.
Ray, you've had a chance to see how this new order is being executed on both sides of the border. What have you learned?
So, yeah, I mean, I wanted to hear firsthand from, you know, some of the people on the front lines of this. And in this case, I wanted to chat with Border Patrol agents because they're the ones basically coming across people who cross the border. And so I joined Border Patrol agents in Laredo.
Okay, right now we're in downtown Laredo, pretty much near the both international bridges, Bridge 1, Bridge 2.
That's Border Patrol Special Operations Supervisor Rafael Garza. He's with the Laredo Border Patrol sector. There's a road to our left and a grassy area to the right, leading down to the river.
What Laredo is, it's very cartel controlled. So the cartels see this as a business. So basically, nobody crosses the river without payment to them.
COVID-19 hasn't changed that, but it has changed how Border Patrol does its job.
Obviously, the use of personal protective equipment, social distancing, the implementation of Title 42 has helped out to mitigate the spread of the coronavirus into the United States, because all these people that are coming across that we do apprehend is we don't know their past travel history, where they're coming from, if they're symptomatic or asymptomatic.
Title 42, which Garza mentioned, is part of the U.S. code that deals with public health. The Trump administration cites Title 42 in the CDC order from March and says that's what allows officials to quickly return migrants who cross the border, even asylum seekers and children who are supposed to go through a formal legal process.
What's happening now is that with the CDC order under COVID, they are saying that public health law basically is superseding immigration law.
Cardinal Brown's the director of immigration and cross-border policy at the Bipartisan Policy Center. She says the Trump administration's use of Title 42 is unprecedented. Title 42 has been around in some form since the 1890s, originally enacted to stop boats from entering U.S. ports if they came from areas dealing with spikes in infectious diseases like smallpox or cholera.
In generally, it has been used in the past or can be used to prevent entry or to quarantine people after they've arrived. But as far as I know, this is the first time it's been used very broadly to apply strictly to people entering between the ports of entry at the U.S.-Mexico land border.
A CBP spokesperson told me, quote, by quickly expelling individuals who cross illegally, we protect them, our agents, and the American public from potential exposure to COVID-19. But migrant advocates and some policy experts disagree, like Cardinal Brown. She and others say this is just the latest way the Trump administration is deterring or preventing people from having full access to the asylum process in the U.S.
So they're not even bothering with any of the immigration law requirements, and they're just simply sending people back to where they came from.
The ACLU and others say what's happening is illegal and filed a lawsuit. The medical community has pushed back too. Dr. Catherine Peeler with Physicians for Human Rights say the group asked 6 experts in infectious disease to review and analyze the CDC order. Their conclusion?
There really was no public health sense behind it. So it really kind of categorically targets one particular group who is not any more at likelihood to essentially spread COVID-19 and other groups that we are continuing to allow into the United States.
In May, Physicians for Human Rights told the CDC asylum asylum seekers are no more likely to spread COVID-19 than students, temporary workers, and truck drivers who cross the border and are currently exempt from these types of restrictions. PHR and human rights organizations like Amnesty International and Human Rights First condemned the practice back in March and said the federal government can both protect public health in the U.S. and migrants seeking protection. During our interview in Laredo, I asked Border Patrol agent Garza about this.
And I think that question is more political. It's a matter of personal opinion, whether it's six experts or six Border Patrol agents. I mean, who are you going to trust? Just because they have an expert title in front of their thing? I mean, well, right now, if you see, it is working. It is a good tool that the United States government is using to mitigate the spread.
CBP data shows since the CDC order went into effect in March, there have been almost 70,000 Title 42 expulsions at the southern border. Most individuals or families returned to Mexico aren't from there and have no idea what to do next. They can end up homeless or targets for organized crime. Just a few reasons advocates and groups like PHR, Amnesty International, and others have called these expulsions inhumane, human rights violations, and that these expulsions violate U.S. refugee laws and treaty obligations. Sarah Melendez is a public affairs officer. She joined Agent Garza and me on the Rio Grande that day. Melendez jumped in to answer a question I had asked Garza about some of the claims made by these human rights organizations.
Any of those questions dealing with human rights or ACLU or anything, you can put those in email writing and we'll have our headquarters office give you a response back to that. Go ahead and submit it in writing and we'll get you a response back because we have to look into it. We got to see what they're talking about and we got to do some more research on it. Okay?
We reached out to CBP, and by email, a spokesperson didn't directly answer the question either, and reiterated that Title 42 has helped mitigate the spread of COVID-19.
That's Reynaldo Leaños Jr. reporting from the Rio Grande Valley. Ray's been examining how expulsions are being carried out in South Texas, but we have another view from another stretch of the border. And we're joined now by KERA's Mallory Falk, who's based in El Paso. Thanks for joining us, Mallory.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you've met a few families that have been expelled from El Paso, where you're based, to Ciudad Juarez across the border, right?
Yes, and that includes an asylum seeker from Guatemala who crossed the border in early April with her two young daughters. She asked us not to use her name out of concerns for her safety. Soon after she crossed into the U.S., she came into contact with Border Patrol.
Nos agarraron a nosotros.
The woman, who asked us not to use her name out of fear for her safety, says officials grabbed them and said, "We're going to take you back to Mexico." They told her they weren't letting anyone into the U.S. They dropped her and her daughters on an international bridge around 3 a.m. She sat down near the base of the bridge and wrapped her younger daughter in a warm jacket, protection against the nighttime chill. Around the same time, Juarez-based immigration lawyer Tanya Guerrero started noticing something strange.
We started seeing a few people come back from the United States without any documentation, and they were being returned through Santa Fe Bridge at really odd hours, very, very late at night, in the middle of the night.
In the year before, asylum seekers sent back to Mexico were placed in the Migrant Protection Protocols, or MPP, and given paperwork with U.S. immigration court dates. What these people described was different.
They have been basically pushed away from the United States with no process whatsoever.
Like the mother I spoke with and her daughters, and this woman.
Hola, buenos días.
From El Salvador, who also asked us not to use her name out of safety concerns. She says she arrived at the border just 10 days after the CDC order went into effect. She recounts her story over video chat from a government-run shelter in Juarez. Her 4-year-old daughter pops in and out of the screen.
Yo decidí salir de mi país porque fui amenazada de muerte por el papá de mi hija.
The woman says they fled from El Salvador when an abusive ex-partner, the girl's father, threatened to kill her. By the time she arrived at the U.S.-Mexico border, it was effectively closed. She says she was apprehended soon after crossing into Texas. Officials took her picture and fingerprints and asked for identification. Then the family was taken to an international bridge. She says they didn't explain what was happening, just told her she had to leave the U.S. She says she begged officials, told them she couldn't go back to her home country or Mexico. The officials, she claims, said they didn't care what happened to her or where she went, but she wasn't getting into the U.S. She says they threatened to press charges if she refused to leave the bridge. She left with her daughter and connected with Mexican officials who convinced a shelter to take her in, a place called the Leona Vicario Migrant Integration Center. The shelter, run by the Mexican government, opened last summer to house asylum seekers and MPP. It's been on lockdown since March, but it's still taken in a few people. Tanya Guerrero, the immigration attorney, worries some people won't make it to shelters. They're mostly left to their own devices, she says, and can fall through the cracks. But she's been able to provide some legal consultations.
And I think the first question to always answer is, what happened to me? They have no idea what happened. Everyone explains it to be extremely fast and that they're not able to express their fears.
That's a big deal because it means they don't have an opportunity to seek asylum. We asked Customs and Border Protection how they determine whether someone is granted a credible fear interview, the first step in the asylum process, and if that's changed since the CDC order went into effect. A CBP spokesperson replied, quote, "These instances are handled on a case-by-case basis." The mother from Guatemala, who was dropped off on a bridge at 3 a.m, she ended up at the Leona Vicario shelter, too. The last time we talked, there was a COVID outbreak at the shelter. At the time, 12 people had tested positive and been placed in isolation. She told me she was ready to leave and hoped to catch a bus back to Guatemala with her two daughters. I don't know if they'll let us in, she says, but we want to leave. Others still hope to find a way into the U.S., even if they don't know when or how that might happen.
That's KERA's Mallory Falk reporting from Ciudad Juarez. Mallory joins us on Fronteras. And Mallory, would you say that the Trump administration's efforts to curb immigration, both legal and illegal, are working? Because it seems from your reporting that asylum seekers are frustrated enough with the process that they're giving up on it.
Well, with the border effectively closed to asylum seekers and with court hearings for people in the Remain in Mexico program getting postponed again and again, some people are giving up, but many others are sticking it out. They've fled from places where they believe they'll die if they go back. And so they're waiting in Mexican border cities, often in dangerous conditions, hoping that they will have an opportunity to cross into the U.S. and make their case for asylum. And there are also cases where these immigration restrictions, rather than causing people to give up, are leading them to take greater risks trying to cross into the U.S. undetected. I talked to Taylor Levy, an immigration lawyer who works with asylum seekers in El Paso and Juarez, and this is what she had to say.
We have people who see no hope on the horizon. They hear no hope about when the border might open up. And so they're driven to make really drastic choices to try and protect their lives and the lives of their children.
She says in the past, families with small children would often try to cross the border in more open areas and turn themselves into border patrol. And now they're trying to cross undetected in more dangerous places. And that's something that she really hadn't seen until these expulsions started in March.
So, Mallory, would you say that there's a difference between expulsion and deportation?
Yes, and Ray touched on this a little bit in his reporting, that an expulsion differs from a deportation in part because there's not this formal legal process where when you're expelled, you're then barred from crossing back into the U.S. for a number of years. And that's what happens with the deportation. And so what we're seeing is that some people who've been expelled are attempting to cross multiple times, hoping that they might be able to make it over the border undetected at some point.
Well, we've been joined by KERA's Mallory Falk. Thank you, Mallory, for your reporting.
You're welcome.
When we come back, stories from expelled migrants, including a young Honduran mother who was sent back to Border Patrol facilities hours after giving birth in the U.S. Stay tuned to Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Asylum is harder to achieve in the U.S. under the Trump administration. The coronavirus pandemic has thrown another wrench into the asylum-seeking process. A recent public health order from the CDC gives the U.S. government the right to suspend the entry of certain migrants. And we're joined again by Texas Public Radio's Reynaldo Leanos Jr. to tell us more. Ray, earlier you reported on expulsions in South Texas. Could you briefly recap what you witnessed?
Yeah, so I was able to, you know, be with Border Patrol agents kind of on the front lines, you know, and be able to hear from them kind of firsthand how they're carrying out these expulsions, you know, of sending back people into Mexico, you know, without, you know, any access to asylum and things that would have been accessible to them before the pandemic.
Right. You actually had a chance to speak with a Central American woman who'd been expelled.
Yeah, I was able to chat with a 23-year-old Honduran woman. I went to her apartment, and when I was there, she was carrying her newborn baby girl. And I remember that the baby girl was tiny, and she was wearing a striped yellow and white jumpsuit with a pink bow on her head. And I remember that the mom was pacing around the apartment, you know, trying to get her daughter to fall asleep.
Her story starts last year. The woman who asked not to be identified out of concerns for her safety says members of MS-13 started pressuring her husband to join and help sell drugs, threatening the family if he didn't. They left Honduras, she tells me, to seek asylum in the U.S. Her daughter was almost due by late March when she, her husband, and young son crossed the Rio Grande into South Texas. After she crossed, she says, they were detained and taken to a Border Patrol facility. That's when she started going into labor. Border officials took her to a local hospital in the Rio Grande Valley. She shows me paperwork from the hospital confirming she delivered there just after 11 a.m. But she says the next day, she and the newborn were brought back to the Border Patrol facility. She thought they'd be able to join someone they knew that was living in the U.S. Instead, a few days later, they were taken to an international bridge. Border officials told the young mother they were all being sent to Mexico because of the coronavirus pandemic. The U.S. wasn't allowing them in. In a May press conference, Acting Department of Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf explained it this way.
And that's critically important because what the CDC, as we came into this pandemic, said is Border Patrol stations, we do not need to keep people there for long periods of time.
There are other stories like hers that are getting attention. Lee Gallant is an attorney with the ACLU. They filed a lawsuit against the federal government over this new expulsion rule.
We believe children and asylum seekers can be safely brought into the United States, quarantined if necessary, tested, but that they cannot be denied a hearing, and that the laws Congress passed specifically provide for hearings, especially for children and asylum seekers.
Gallant isn't working with the mother I spoke to, but he is representing a 16-year-old boy who fled Honduras, who is hoping to seek refuge in the U.S. and hoping to reunite with his father here in the U.S. Gallant says in a preliminary ruling, the federal judge agreed with the ACLU and said the boy had a right to apply for asylum.
The government was not going to give this boy an asylum hearing until it got a negative ruling from the judge, and then all of a sudden decided that they would provide this boy with rights.
Gallant says
it feels very much like the government does not want the courts to look at their new policy.
They plan on pursuing more cases. The Honduran mother tells me she told border officials they were doing something illegal because her baby was born in America. She says she begged them to please at least let her and her baby stay because she had just given birth and they had nowhere to go in Mexico. The mother says U.S. officials dropped them off at an international bridge. The Mexican immigration officials showed up and told them to leave. That night, she says, the family slept in a park. As she recounts her story, her daughter falls asleep on her shoulder. Eventually, she says, a local nun helped them find this apartment. Now, they're not sure what's next. They don't have any legal representation. Her husband says they still hope to get their kids into the U.S. and seek asylum. He says they don't feel safe in Mexico. In the meantime, he's gotten a job locally to pay the rent while the family waits for the border to reopen.
That's Reynaldo Leanos Jr. reporting from Reynosa, Mexico. Thank you so much for your reporting, Ray.
Thanks, Norma. Thanks for having me.
The Border Patrol and Immigration and Customs Enforcement have been flying Mexican nationals who crossed the U.S. border to Mexico. This ongoing collaboration between the Mexican government and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security has been taking place since May. And joining me to talk more about this is freelance journalist Antonio Cueto, who's been seeing how it plays out in Mexico City. Welcome, Antonio.
Hey.
Antonio, can you tell us what you've witnessed?
Yeah, so like you said, U.S. Border Patrol saw an increase in Mexican migrants trying to cross the border repeatedly between March and May. They said that this raises concerns of COVID-19 spread into the U.S. So in a collaboration with the Mexican government, they started flying migrants deep into Mexico City to discourage them from trying to cross again.
The few travelers here all wear mandatory face masks. Occasionally, a message over intercom reminds travelers to take precautions to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Adán Jacome León is a volunteer with the activist group Deportados Unidos en la Lucha.
Bueno, yo llego a las 11 de la mañana los jueves.
He says he comes to the airport each Thursday at 11 to welcome expelled Mexican migrants. Four flights, operated by ICE Air, arrive weekly from San Diego or Brownsville, two on Thursdays and two on Fridays. Jacome says migrants on board tell him they've crossed at many different points along the U.S.-Mexico border. Some of the passengers are deportees who've been detained for months. Others have been expelled two or three days after crossing into the U.S. He's able to tell the difference by bracelets. People in detention for a while have green ones. The coated paper kind, like what you'd get at a concert. Volunteers with Deportados Unidos en la Lucha, like Jacome, distribute fresh face masks to migrants. Jacome is also passing out flyers with Deportados Unidos contact information, in case people need help reestablishing themselves in Mexico. After landing, officials from a Mexican government agency break migrants into four groups and sends them to Mexico City's biggest bus stations. That day, I meet a Mexican migrant at Central del Norte, the bus station connecting the city to northern Mexico. He's from the Mexican state of Hidalgo and asked me not to use his name because he fears for his safety. He says he crossed the border in McAllen and was detained for 4 days before he was put on a flight. He didn't know the destination. The flight, according to him, was full. There were three people on both sides of each row of seats, making it impossible to social distance. Everyone was seated chained from their feet, hips, and hands. He says the only COVID-19 precaution officials took was a blood pressure and temperature check before boarding. It wasn't until landing that he found out they were in Mexico City. By email, a CBP spokesperson said these repatriation flights, on top of reducing the spread of COVID-19 into the U.S., also ease the strain of Mexico's resources at the border. But Jacome, the volunteer at the airport, says he thinks they're really just punishments.
El castigo es que los mandan hasta acá, si los agarraron en San Diego y son de Zacatecas, entonces los mandan hasta...
He says this is a way to discourage migrants from crossing again, because if the migrants are from Zacatecas, Torreón, or other faraway cities, they're now deep in Mexico City, a 14-hour drive from the U.S. So it's now especially hard for them to go back north to the U.S.-Mexico border. However, some do go back right after landing. Mexico's National Migration Institute pays for their bus tickets to wherever they say is their destination. If Jacome is right about the flights, the discouragement is working, at least with the man I met at the bus station. He's getting a ticket back to his hometown in the Mexican state of Hidalgo. He'd left for the U.S. to find a better life. But he says he won't try crossing the border anytime soon, because it's just really hard to do right now.
That's Antonio Cueto reporting from Mexico City, and Antonio's on the line with us right now from Mexico City. Antonio, tell us a little bit more about the conditions that these migrants are in, because from what I understand, they cross the border illegally, and then they're detained. But there's a lot more to that story. They've probably been wandering in this hot desert heat for a while before they're sent back, correct?
That's right. So one of the migrants that I talked to told me that he walked in the desert for 2 days and one night before he got detained. And these are migrants that, instead of being detained for, they used to be detained for a couple months, now they spend 2 or 3 days in detention. They don't get to shower through the whole time, and then they get sent back to Mexico City. But they don't tell them where they're being sent. They just tell them that they're being sent to Mexico, and they don't find out the destination until they land.
And so what happens to them at that point?
A lot of them decide to go back to the border and try to cross again. Many of them also do get discouraged and just turn back and go to their towns once they get here.
Well, Antonio Cueto, thank you so much for your reporting, and thanks for joining us on Fronteras today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show online at tpr.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. This week's episode was edited by Rachel Osher-Lindley and Fernando Ortiz Jr. A special thanks this week to senior editor for the Texas Newsroom, Fernanda Camarena, Texas Public Radio's Reynaldo Leaños Jr., Mallory Falk of KERA News, and freelance journalist Antonio Cueto. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.